Welcome to the second phase of the internationally acclaimed Positive Personal Power Podcast. This webcast is devoted to pillars of success and philosophies of life and the hardcore tools you must have to achieve success in business and life. Distinguished and successful, internationally known business and thought leaders, Nathaniel Schooler and Stephen J. Manning, give you their hardcore tools to succeed in business and life. Schooler and Manning are as hardcore about success as boot camps in the military and training camps in professional sports. Now, here is your host, Nathaniel Schooler.
Well, I am privileged again to be joined by Stephen J. Manning on what is our fourth interview here on the hardcore tools to succeed. And very interesting, Stephen J. Manning, if you don't know him, he built a billion-dollar marketing business from the ground up, and he has sold over $47 billion worth of goods and services online. And, excuse me. And in this particular episode, we're going to talk about Art the Janitor and also competencies. So welcome, Stephen. It's lovely to see you again.
Thank you, Nat. Always my pleasure.
I think best thing is we talk about Art the Janitor a little bit later. It's a fantastic story. But I think before that, you know, digging into competencies and how those competencies align with, you know, your ego, your abilities, and your confidence are all, you know, very key kind of elements. So I know you've got a lot to sort of say around those.
Thank you. You have actually done a great deal of really, really cool work on the whole confluence of competencies, self-confidence and intelligence, all brain power. You've done a great deal of work, which I appreciate hearing and reading all of that. I think as a core matter, we all need to understand and be faithful to our core competencies. We all have some. You do, I do, everyone we know, everyone that's listening and watching this has some competencies that are relevant to their lives and going forward. I think it's interesting, and it's very important to never confuse competency with self-confidence or ambition or actually intelligence, just raw brain power. It's also important to understand that competencies are both qualitative and quantitative. You know, I've heard this, you've heard this 100 times, you know, in terms of competencies, you know, hey, we can teach a monkey to fly a space shuttle. That may be true. But the competency is limited to push button 1, 2, 9, 12 in that sequence. You can ask that monkey to come up with a different configuration or qualitatively figure out what's right or what's wrong. You know, it's only on television where you can see the world-class lawyer or engineer or whatever he or she is who has to perform delicate brain surgery on the captain of the plane while flying a jumbo jet at 34,000 feet. And that happens on television, and I'm quite certain it's never happened in life before. And I think about that in context of I need to understand what your competencies are and then the limits of your competency. You and I talked about this a while ago. Just in short, I was sitting in this boardroom. I was the crazy executive board member of this company within this merger acquisition that I was shepherding. It's a room full of investment bankers and lawyers, and a lady on my right introduced me, and they all look around and they said, well, Steve has significant competencies in all the financial aspects of this. And besides, he's a really aggressive board member here. And I said, thank you. And the conversation goes on between these really high quality people. And they're talking about this and that and short-term capital loss carry forward. I think I know what that means, but I just like saying it. Short-term capital loss carry forward, that's cool. And I was real cool for about 20 minutes. And then somebody said, used the word debentures. And then I excused myself and left because they just exhausted my degree of competency. It doesn't matter how smart I am, I might have been, how much I knew about the company, running the business, the whole merger acquisition thing. Somebody said debentures. I ran for the hills quicker than you can believe, you know, and gave up a great lunch. And, you know, and ultimately, the person who invited me, which is CEO of this company, said, what happened? I said, I know what I know, and I'm really clear on what I don't know. And that's another topic that you and I talk about, is perhaps the singularly most relevant strength I have as an executive, not a businessman, as an executive. I'm very, very clear on what I know and what I don't know, particularly what I don't know. And that's when you become a shameless researcher. That's when I call Nat, saying, Nat, you know this, I don't, what do you think? Rather than, you know, and Google has limits, as you well know. So that's sort of our overall idea about competencies. You need to know what they are. You have to respect the competencies that you have or don't have. That does not mean that you can't acquire more competencies as you go along. And you will. If you want to be successful in life, you will become competent at more than putting your shoes on in the morning. I'm not trying to be unkind, because to someone who's putting our shoes on in the morning, it's a bit of a task. I mean, you know, I have bad knees. Putting shoes on in the morning requires some degree of competency.
Yeah. So, I know that feeling. Sometimes, like when I finish my jiu-jitsu class, like I'm like, I really have to sit down to put on my shoes, right? Like, but you know, before I could just like, you know, stand up, put my foot out in the air, put my shoe on, you know. Now, no. but you know, in terms of kind of getting thrown at the deep end, right? Like, to learn stuff and become competent at some point, I mean, you have to be incompetent, right? I mean, everybody's incompetent at certain things when they start to do them. And we're all kind of programmed in a certain way. Some people are better at really technical things. Some people are not so good at that. People are better at kind of creative things. So, I mean, obviously, you know, you don't want to get stuck in and try and be a brain surgeon, right? But at the end of the day, there are a lot of things in the technology world that if you were so inclined, you could just get stuck into and kind of learn. But it's not easy at the beginning of these kind of learning curves.
Mm-hmm. I have found that as I progress through life, there's very few things that are really easy. It's easy to be superficial. It's difficult to be really competent. And a lot of people don't develop competences beyond the day-to-day function because they are scared of it. And then a lot of people go way beyond their competencies. They diversify without acquiring the appropriate competency. Again, you know, a monkey can fly a space shuttle, but can't think beyond the sequence of the buttons. And you know what? One of the things that we talk about as well is that whereas you develop competencies, best develop competencies within what you do now and what you will immediately do before you develop what I call tangential competencies. That's the mirage of diversification. It's like you and I do this, but we know that there are people out there doing that. And we really want to jump in and do that because it's seductive. It looks cool. Don't know how to say it. It's cool until you get there often. You know, the grass is always greener. And then you get there, you recognize it's actually astroturf. It ain't exactly grass. You know, that is true of us. It's true of Fortune 100. For Fortune 50s who get hell-bent on diversifying. Why? Because they're really that smart and they run the business so darn well. And you know what? Just because you can build great cars or build skyscrapers or make hyper-sophisticated, expensive drugs doesn't mean you can run a string of laundries in Alabama. You know, it's a problem, but you think you can. Not necessarily. because, you know, that's a different paradigm. You need a crew. Well, wait a minute. We can do that. We're smart. I'm smart. I can run my sister-in-law's business better. Really? Now, let's just say that it requires competencies that you may not have. All of that is good and well. We go do that. General Motors goes buy something big. And you know what? And we have all this great staff who are going to run the heck out of it. They're going to fix it. They're going to improve it. They're going to do so much. And then you go back and say, wait, because everybody's mesmerized, a new shiny penny. I want to be in on that. And what happens next? What happens next? All of a sudden, the core business, your core job, your core professional endeavor begins to really suffer because you've ignored it. You know, it's you're chasing the shiny penny where your competencies are not there. What is earning you the living, what's earning you the opportunity to chase that is now suffering. That's where your basic competency lays. What do? Well, you study and learn and maybe gain, or you buy that competency, or you join something. You know, it's. I follow the career of Roger Smith, legendary chairman of General Motors and all that. Certainly during my time, every single business school in the world taught Roger Smith. And I said, as a person, I need to understand his decision-making processes. How is he so competent beyond anybody else? Okay, well then, of course, it was, he decided to diversify too. He created Saturn Motor Company. And guess what happened? Was a great idea, but no. They didn't have the competency to do that. They created in 1985, was gone by the late 2000s. It's gone for a couple of reasons. They really didn't understand how to make that car that way. The sell-through was totally different. They were not competent in that. And what happened? Why did they go out of business? I did a talk on Saturn, and then it's very, actually, my take is a little bit different. First of all, 2008, 2009, the world hit the skids in the United States. We had a recession driven by real estate more than anything else. Guess what? Sales slumped, costs sky high. Everything remained the same, except I said, well, actually, let's focus on competencies. The most competent thing that General Motors has done is being the real estate business. They own more real estate than anybody. They are really in the real estate business, and then they're in the finance business. Why? Because they finance all those on-down cars. The real estate part of GM is mammoth. That they knew how to do better than anybody else. And guess what? In 2008, real estate tanked, GM tanked. How is that for not understanding what your competencies are?
Wow. Yeah, I mean, it's very prevalent, isn't it, in branding as well. You know, when these companies, they're like, oh, well, you know, why don't we launch another five flavors? It's like, yeah, but you're trying to launch five more flavors and you're just diluting the initial brand. But so many people don't know that. And all the people in the executive department, a lot of them just turn around and go, well, you know, oh, we must launch this extra special light version of this. You know, who was it? Coors did that. And the sales just kind of, it didn't really help the sales at all, did it, at the end of the day? You know, so, yeah, I think it's fascinating, all of this sort of stuff.
It's actually amazing when you have 31 great flavors and then you decide to launch three more. They have slick names, slick components. Whoever thought of salted ice cream? Meanwhile, the brand managers want to do that. Hey, shiny new penny. I want my name on that. And then what happens when your vanilla sales go down? Because nobody's paying attention. What happens when your particular soap product that's been around since 1920, all of a sudden you're starting losing market share? Why? Because nobody wants to sell the Kellogg crispy thing. It's old, man, and we've done 100 of those now. Nobody wants to do that. Well, guess what? When you look down the list, you say, where exactly are we making our money? Well, 90% of our profits come from 10% of our products. when you look at the list of those, how many are brand new? Well, we weren't quite competent yet to do that. Okay. And what happened to the GMs and the GEs and the US Steels and all those companies who went insane on going away from the core competencies? They went insane on making something beyond passive investment. They went insane on diversifying. Guess what? I think they pretty much all sold that stuff. What's happening today at Google, at Meta? I mean, if they dish out, they buy stuff for $1 billion or $2 billion, kind of like you and I get dressed in the morning. Buy that for $2 billion. And then what happens when they discover, well, it's not quite what we thought it was. They're really, you know, doesn't quite mesh what we do now. Oh, heck, sell it or dump it because it's hurting the mother, the core business, you know. And I grew up in an environment, in a business where it was law, protect the mother business, because that's really how we got to be successful. It's not being mesmerized by stuff that we didn't have any competency in.
I've got to interrupt that. I think that's very interesting. But then how do you manage sort of innovation? I mean, do you just continually innovate within that specific framework? Or do you sort of just say, well, if it's not really very relevant, we have to park it? Or how does that sort of work in that area, Steve?
Well, you know, there are two schools of thought which do coexist. One of them is you have to innovate, you know, to grow and to expand beyond your borders, you have to innovate. Or you have to acquire innovation. You have to acquire that competency rather than innovating it. I've said this 500 times. You know, in a great wars between Hertz and Avis. Avis, for years, spent millions and millions promoting the fact that they're number two. We're number two. I said that's a great place to be because Avis is not making some of the big boo-boos that Hertz has made. And they're content being a hyper-successful number two. You know what, Nat? You go ahead and do that. If it works out, I'll copy you. Doesn't work out, I'm smart for not having done it. I alluded to growing up in a business that my boss, I worked for a brilliant man for almost 20 years. And he was most challenging human being I have ever been around. And that includes my first wife, whom I happen to like a great deal. But he had this thing, you need to protect the mother. I learned to hate that. Need to protect the mother. The mother is why we're successful. We can't, because, you know, all of us young bucks want to do this, want to do that. Hey, did you hear what Nat Schooler's doing? They got into that business. We need to, we can do that better than he does. And my boss would say, you need to protect the mother. Now, to your question, it's, I remember one of many. I walked into his office one day and said, look, I'm going to do this. He didn't know much of what I was doing. He didn't know. Thankfully, he didn't know, didn't get involved. Otherwise, I would have committed suicide. But I said, I'm going to do this. He said, what is it? I said, it's not that big a deal. It's going to bring in maybe $3 million. He said, oh, okay. And then he said, so what does it take to do this? I said, not a whole lot. I need an extra analyst. I need an admin person, some little resources, external resources, not that big a deal. And then he said, well, what about you? What will it take from you to do this, to manage it and all that? And I said, a couple hours a week. I could do that on my mobile phone, driving back and forth to work and around between our buildings. And then I looked at him and said, no, you know that's not right. What do you mean it's not right? It's going to take more than that. More importantly, it's going to take your eye off of what we do here. I sat for 2 hours on a 405 driving home. He said to me, you know, he was kind of out of, he said to me, you know, Steve, why don't you find someplace in the world when it's snowing, real good snow, go skiing for a few days. And you'll come up with something much bigger and better. As you know, doing this, you're not protecting the mother. I was annoyed, upset. I mean, come on, man. This is a slam dunk. But I'll tell you what happened as a result of that. As angry as I was, it forced me to stay in this lane and innovate in this lane. And without a doubt, over short time, longer time, we did create breakthroughs in marketing and media, advertising, operations. And we were just more and more successful in our vertical. So in our business, now rather than business I call horizontal, we do this and then we have the laundries in Alabama and then we manufacture drugs in Thailand, so on. Mm-mm. We just did what we did and we just did more of it and better to great success. The only caveat to that as an individual, whether you're working in a job or you have a leadership position somewhere, you run a business. When you have a business such as the one I described, this is what we do. We just do more of it and better all the time. The thing that made us more successful perhaps than most is that the homework we did was insane. We were in a war mode all the time. When you do a few hundred million dollars of business and take home 5% after tax, some people have parties. We went into war mode because it could change. But the thing that you have got to understand that when you have a one-trick pony in a circus, it can break a leg. And that takes us to an immense homework and the absurd legal fees to do homework, to make sure that this pony doesn't break a leg and understand that everybody's pony can break a leg. You can walk and work today, 1st of January, and your boss says, I'm sorry, I got to scale down. You're brilliant, you're wonderful, you're a terrific employee. I have to let you go. That pony just broke a leg. Now, what are you going to do? If you've been sitting in your underwear on a couch saying, I'm lucky I have a great job, you missed something very big here. The pony can break a leg. You need to continue developing those competencies. And when that pony breaks a leg, your pony breaks a leg, you have competencies that are marketable. They're transportable. I have a list of 10 companies on the call and say, I'm looking for a job. I'd like to work for you. Rather than trying to hunt for jobs. No, you pick up the phone or you send an email to that company and say, I have these competencies. I'm going to work for you. But again, I grew up in an environment where, I confess that there are a number of things that my company did that my chairman found out about when I retired from the company at 35. That's when I gave him the one pager with the 44 line items that were critical to the business. 44 on one page.
Wow. I love a good one pager. I think if you can't get anything on one page, if you can't get it all on one page, there's something wrong with you, right? I mean, look here. So basically, we're talking here about people competencies now as well, right? They're intertwined, aren't they? Because they're the people that come up with the innovation that then you can use within the business to grow. And that can be in production, it can be in media, it can be in whatever business it's in, right? So, you know, of your people, right, that's an elegant proposition. How do you recognize hidden talent and competencies that are not obvious and then capitalize on those, Steve?
As you said, I think it's an elegant proposition, but it starts out with you need to know your people. And I don't mean there are 42 people in that department, there are 122 over there, there are 12 here, and I am a boss, I know 19 people. All I know is what the group does. That doesn't work. Ultimately, it doesn't work. That's a very interesting proposition when you happen to have 400,000 people. At this point, you as a boss are limited to certain levels you can actually meet. Now, in my little humble experience, and you'll forgive me for this, our company had a few thousand employees, but I one day became boss in operations. And why? Because we fired the guy who ran operations. He looked great in a suit, wrote great reports, and other than that, he was really useless. Interesting, because we hired him out. Before we hired him, he ran all duty-free shops and vending machines in the U.S. Found out that he looked great in a suit. And I think he was a McKinsey guy. So, yes, I get the job because I don't have time for anything. You always give it to the busiest guy, right? And I said, look, sir, look, I inherited a whole level of management. These people come out of big companies and look at this payroll, and it's creaking. It's not working well. We're getting by. We're doing well. But it's creaking. I'm hearing the pony complain, you know? So at 6:15 every morning for weeks, I walked through several buildings. I kind of saw, you know, 400 people here, 500 there, whatever. I walked the building and said, hello, how you doing? And I met a bunch of people. And I met a bunch of my supervisors, young people, men and women, you know, old guys, old women. And, you know, it took me a month until they stopped calling me Jefe. I said, it's just Steve.
I love you that. Know?
It's not Jefe. It's not boss. It's Steve. And then I did the same thing at 4:30 in the afternoon. Why? Because the second shift starts at 4. I shake hands with a lot of people and meet a lot of nice surprises. I did the same thing at 3 in the morning because it was a third shift. So I shook hands with a lot of people. I said, you know what? Well, we are driving our fancy cars and banking big salaries. There's an engine running back there. I mean, there's people feeding the darn pony in Washington and so on. And that's why I said, wait a minute. You can't confuse competency with like education and even experience. You know, sometimes competency equals just brain power. And then another topic you and I discuss at length is also resounding, yes, I can do that if you let me, from people who are somebody you meet at 2 in the afternoon or 3 in the morning, who impresses you as this is a young person who can do. And that's when you begin to really grind through those people is when you have an event that you and I talked about on that podcast, which you wouldn't let me call. I wanted to call it Friday the 13th Massacre. You wouldn't let me do that. But the reality is that running a big operation, I came to a point where I said, I need to recognize the competencies in people, what they can do, and then make them do it. That's when I fired essentially three levels of management and operations and elevated a bunch of kids, a bunch of young people, and a bunch of supervisors who looked at me and said, you know, I'm illiterate. I can't really do this, but you will. And then there's some, perhaps the most satisfying part of my career is how some of those people succeeded to greatness in many other companies, you know. And then you art the janitor. Now, how do you recognize talents?
That's a good one.
May I relate that? Of course, we had a janitorial crew, a bunch of people who surprisingly wore dark green shirts, pants, men and women with name patches, dark green, crisp. And I ask myself, there are people pushing brooms at 3 in the morning in crisp green uniforms. That's interesting. Of course, Art, the head janitor, a man about this big, a diminutive guy who had a 22-inch waist and a 40-inch barrel chest and a buzz cut. And I remember one day at 10 o'clock every morning, Art would cruise by my office, look around, look at the trash cans, and say, is everything okay? This was like a recorded conversation. Everything's fine, Art. How are you doing? And he look at me and say, just making a clean slate of things. You have a good day. I had this conversation with Art 5 days a week when I was in the office. And this little man marched out like a Marine Corps. And every morning, just making a clean slate of things. Big day when he stopped and said, by the way, I just reduced our cost for the solvent for the floors. I bought this, I bought that, saving $2,800 a year. I said, Art, that's fantastic. And then one day, right after he said, just making a clean slate of things, got the door, turned around and said, you guys do some really strange stuff. Art, us guys who, you like the, you know, the big creative brains, you know? We had a group of people, the R&D department, that was a creative team who met twice a week for 4 hours, who traveled once a month for 4 or 5 days as a group. And everybody in this was tasked with creating no less than 3 significant promotional ideas every 3 weeks and submit them. Promotion sweepstakes and premium incentive devices, so on. Pretty complex stuff. And what was the budget? There was no budget. You spend what you think you should spend. And we wouldn't say no, because, you know, you can do some dumb stuff 10 times. If you do something smart the 11th time, man, that pays for all your sins. The two owners, chairman, the VP general manager, VP advertising, a senior copywriter. We got him out of J. Walter Thompson. The guy who came up with the Uncola for 7-Up. And 3 young women, 1 year, 2 years out of college. Smart kids. That and me. That was the creative group. They came up with all this stuff that ran the thing, the promotional stuff. So I said to Art, what are you talking about? Art, the janitor's telling me we do some weird stuff. Well, you know, I don't understand some of the promotional stuff you do. I'm saying, and I said, well, that's pretty sophisticated. We do a few $100 million. And this is just, and he said, I said, what are you talking about? You know, your Christmas book, oh, we did 20, 30 catalogs a year. And one of the Christmas catalogs, an 8.5 by 11. He said, I just saw the new book you did. It's okay. Why are you wasting the front cover? What do you mean? It's pretty. It's Christmas. Christmas tree. Pretty model. Holding Christmas stuff. It's Christmas. He said, do you really think your customers care about the Christmas cover? I said, we think so. He said, well, I'm more like your customer than you are. So I don't care. And besides, I know that whatever's in that cover sells really well. I said, well, you're right, but, he said, but all you smart guys and women, you just, I don't think you get it. I said to myself, I can't ask him to leave because he's a really nice man. And I said, this guy just lectured me on missing a really big boat. And I said, okay, Art, see you tomorrow. He walked out. I thought about it, and we had a creative meeting that day. And I laid this on the team. They all looked at me like, huh? We always do this. I said, so happens the Art the janitor thinks it's a terrible idea. They looked at me like, does he have a better idea? I said, yeah, put really, really great product on there that moves really well. It will sell really well. And they looked at me and I said, they said, Art is a really great head of janitorial services. Okay. So exactly 3 days later, when he walked in my office and he asked me how things were, and he told me that he was making a clean slate of things, I said, Art, you now have an additional job. Oh, you have just become a creative director. So what exactly does that mean? You're joining the R&D department. What do you mean? You're going to be 2 weeks, 2 meetings a week. You're going to travel. And you have the same budget everybody else has. And Art looked at me and said, are you insane? I said, no. He said, well, first of all, he said, do you understand that I was kind of illiterate? I learned, I can now read and write. Oh, well, but man, I can't clean buildings. I said, great. So you're going to have to come up with 3 creative ideas for this company once a week, or every 3 weeks or so on. And he said to me, out of your mind. I said, the next meeting is next Tuesday, 11 to 2. Tell Vicky what you want for lunch.
And then she's walking out the door. I said, it would also be really cool if to every meeting we go to and when we travel, we'd go to New York, Chicago, whatever the hell. Everywhere we traveled, had these big meetings. It'd be cool if you wore a uniform, you know, janitorial art. Wear your uniform. Art became a creative director. And his perspective was very different than ours because he said, I'm more like your customer than you are. I don't like that. I think it's better this way. Oh, by the way, yes, I did test a book. I tested it with the Christmas thing and just a nice little wreath. It looked cool. And three really high-selling products. And guess what happened? Art became my hero instantly. Because, of course, he was right. You find these people in the most unlikely places, but you got to meet them first. It's really amazing. Now, I can't claim for being brilliant, for wanting to meet all these people. I mean, I run into some people in my life that were just phenomenal at that. Sandy Sigaloff of Wix company's fame, you know, Sandy Sigaloff walked into the annual big event for the company. There were 1,800 people in there with spouses and all. And he walked in and shook hands with 500 people as he walked the podium and said, hey, Nat, how you doing? And they said something relevant about family. Hey, Bobby got his braces off? Huh?
That's amazing. I remember you telling me that.
It was amazing. Of course, he was also the only executive, top executive in the company, that took a coach flight back home that evening rather than one of the company jets. And he went from a bankrupt company in 2 years, 2 years into VIX. He was no longer bankrupt. He had $2 billion in the bank. And the company was still doing $3 billion. But, you know, he just recognized he took a meat cleaver to the business and to the people. Nat Schooler is my star. Wait a minute. He's a third rank guy in a factory in Chattanooga. Great. Tell him he's moving to L.A. And it was an amazing experience to see a guy who met people and asked them, what do you do? Tell me why you do it. And a week later, they shut down factories and picked those people and say, that guy told me why this is wrong. You know, it becomes significant. It's just a story about Art the Janitor.
Yeah, it's great. It's a great story. And, you know, I know we've talked a bit about the story of the kids who took over the big operations. I think that is fantastic. You know, what a great story. And basically just getting rid of people that are just fat on the proceeds of other people's work, right? And doing nothing. They're adding no value. They play golf all day. I love the fact that you just turned around and basically just fired them. Yeah, I think it's brilliant. And flip the business on its head, right? I think that's fantastic. Because we talked a bit about this, I think, in another one of these episodes and went over the sort of whole story. But it's amazing, you know. And so what were these people's faces like? When you turned around to a kid who was basically like a supervisor and you said, look, I'm going to promote you and double your wages. And by the way, you're going to run the whole building. And if you don't do it in a week, you're fired. Like, what was his face like? Like, what happened?
Every one of those people looked at me like I'd fallen on my head, and had significant brain event. And I would look at him and say, "Do you know how to do this?" "No." "How long would it take you to figure out how to do this?" "Oh, a year." "Okay, you got a week." They said, "Well, you understand that you understand I don't know how." So you got a week to think about how. You're gonna have to be kind of competent at this, or you're gonna get fired. But you don't hang people out. You say, however, we have people, you have questions, you ask. We have industrial engineers, you know. If you're sitting there saying, when you're sitting in the middle of the night saying, "Oh my God, call me." Because I'm hanging out with you, and they look at you and say, "Well, one of those kids you and I talked about. It's in the last show we did. Ernie said to me, you understand that I'm 4 years younger than you think I am, because I lied when you guys hired me." And then he said, "You understand that I'm just learning to read and write in English." I said, oh, okay, so what? But you're smarter than all these people above you. I know that because I saw you. I saw you do it in the middle of the day. You were doing stuff that nobody else started doing. Well, I'm really not competent any this way. How about you get competent in a hurry? And then on Friday afternoon, you call them in and say, congratulations. You have a 300,000 square foot building, 475 people, and you better make the best of it. But Steve, I said, get out of here and say hi to your wife. I said, my wife? I said, yeah, I know that the young woman who's a secretary in the traffic area is really your wife. I know that. Oh, not supposed to know, but I do. You know, you guys got married at what, 17? And then Ernie walked out of my office. Of course, I then called in a couple of the other people that are instrumental in the process, said, look, that guy is going to now run this building. They said to me, everyone said that the kid, everyone called him a kid because he's 125 pounds soaking wet. They called him a kid. I said, yeah, the kid. And all these brains said, well, the kid. I said, tell you what, if he fails, you get fired. I mean, you know, this is war. Ernie ended up running distribution for one of the biggest supermarket chains in the world. You know, so it's you recognize the talent. If you know, you got to look at your people. It's not different than your own personal experience. We talk about this all the time. When everybody else says no or says nothing, you go, I will. I'll do it.
Saying yes, right? Like we talk about that in one of the other episodes.
You
don't
say
we?
Yes, mm-hmm. And what happens is then you bloody figure it out.
Yeah, you know? That's the point, isn't it? It's taking those skills that you perhaps don't have, but actually could learn quickly if you were thrown in at the deep end, because you've got other peripheral sort of skills that are complementary. And you've got a mindset that says, yeah, I can do that. And you just get stuck into it, right? I was just talking about it to my brother today, actually.
You know, you'll forgive me for a personal thing here while somebody's annoying me here. This is personal. But it's absolutely appropriate of say yes when nobody else does. My daughter... spent 10 years working for Universal Music. Now she works for a ticketing platform based out of the UK, by the way. And they're growing, and she goes to work for them, and she runs a marketing team, marketing management team here in LA. It was, just, I don't know, 8-9 people. And she's been with this company for exactly 8 months. And she's got bosses, and they got bosses. And then they got bosses, and then they got investors, just coughed up $20 million more. And the company decides to undertake a major project, which is produce 8 live TV shows for Amazon Music in conjunction with the NFL. NFL Thursday night game followed by an Amazon Music concert. So I said to her, if you're going to fail, might as well start at the top. You know, you fail with Amazon, you're dead. And she said, they decided they want to do this. They had a contractor on working with them who knew something about production stuff. Nobody on staff to do this. And guess what happens? You screw this up. It's deadly. It's deadly to the company. Because it's totally new and different. So the word goes out to 400 employees. Who wants to work on this? Well, hell, nobody wants to work on that dog, you know. This is 100 ways that's going to go bad. And this is where I have tremendous pride to say that clearly my daughter has been listening to us, Nat. Because when 399 people didn't say anything, she said, I'll do it. And I remember, I'll do it. That was 1 week before the first concert. They didn't have a venue. They didn't have a soda fountain. They had nothing. But the company said, we'll do it. How do you fail with doing a project for Amazon? You don't. She, of all the people, she said, I'll do it. And she tells us about it next day. And I said, fantastic. And she said, maybe you can tell me where I can actually get a venue. You don't have a venue. Oh, no. Who are the artists? I don't know. Have you figured out how to sell tickets? Well, we have a platform, but it's different. This is a live event for us. And I said, fantastic. She said, I don't think I'm going to sleep for a while. But she got up and said, yes. This last Thursday was the last of the 8 shows. The producer guy went off to do something else after the first 5. I said, Alex, you do it. My daughter's name is Alexandra. And what they had was an absolute resounding success. And when they had an all-company web meeting, 400 people looking at each other online, right? The last item, you know, they do the review of the year. The last item was they announced what they call Baller of the Year Award. That's the employee of the year who pulled some, and they nominated, there were 399 votes for her and one for somebody else. That's the one she cast. And when everybody says no or says nothing, you're the one that says yes. And here she's 8 months into this company. They pull off something that on the other side of miraculous, to be clear. And then it's an amazing thing for me, as I would like to think I'm a mentor to her, as my wife is. My wife is as much a mentor to my daughter as I am. Whatever my daughter does, it's there's a gene pool factor there for my wife, without a doubt. But the part where she said yes when nobody else said anything, and now 399 people in the company say, you are the rock star here. And then she forwards a couple of emails, a couple of the 200 and a couple of the 250 text messages, you're a rock star. And when you get the message from the CEO who said, never seen anything like this before, you jumped in, you said yes, when nobody else said yes. And what you've accomplished is it's astounding. And I'm only sharing this because pride as her dad. Also, when I preach to say yes and nobody else says anything, hey, the first turn in my career as a kid, as a young guy, was when I said yes. Well, I should have said no. I said yes to my boss. Can you do this? Yeah, I can. I had a choice, getting fired now or getting fired a month from now. I figured I did it. That was the first turning point of my career in business. And now here I am years later, and my kid says, I'll do it. She's not a kid. You know, she's in the 30s, but I'll do it when 399 people say. And then she comes and drags some. Yeah, it's just such a great event in the life of us and in the life for your podcast and mine when we talk about keys to success. Promoting yourself to success. You got to be ready and willing and able. And then you have to say yes when everybody else says no.
But also getting ready for being able to do that sort of thing. I mean, she clearly has all the right skills and abilities to be able to think quickly, to organize things well. I mean, there'll be certain competencies that she already has. And just because she turned around and said, do you know what? I can do this. I'm going to go for it and give it my best shot. Then everything happened to help her. You know, it's similar to why I got into podcasting, right? It's the same thing. It's like I was scared out of my mind, right, to launch a show all on my own. But that actually led me to massive, massive things like, you know, interviewing you, talking with you a lot of my time now. And you know, doing a lot of work with certain companies. I think you've got to accept that, most definitely accept the fact that you can do a lot of stuff. But if you're starting with nothing, then that's a different kind of fish, isn't it?
My daughter's competencies, without a doubt, among many, because she's a rock star. She's wickedly smart. She's bleeding as brilliant. But her competence is appropriate to everything we're talking about here. It's just that. She understands what she knows, and she's clear about what she does not know. She is like us, my wife and I, she is a shameless researcher. Don't get in the way. She'll knock you down. And then she grew up with the same notion that you and I spent so much time on. Always ask the next question and the next and the next. Because when you think you got the right answer, no, you don't. You have a testable hypothesis. Well, if that's true, what else? Ask another question. And you pick up the phone or you do something. You know, regressing a couple of years, my older daughter was a senior producer for broadcast at Shia Day, Saatchi Saatchi Worldwide. By the time she was 25, she bought 100% of music for Saatchi Saatchi for all their commercials. In her mid late 20s, she was producing all the Sony commercials and the Nissan commercials for this massive agency. And you know what? She knew exactly. She knew how to negotiate a contract with Michael Mann for $5 million to do a 30-second spot in Mexico. But she called me to ask me, how do I get my cars unbooted in Mexico City? Because the police booted my cars. I can't shoot the car if it's booted. It's the same question when she called me and say, look, I'm in San Francisco. It's the 5th of July, and Nissan just decided they want snow in a big city for the commercial. I'm shooting right now. What do you think? Okay, what I know about snow in big cities, I know that it's snowing in Santiago in Chile. You can take the whole crew down south. You can't do that. I said, but I happen to know a guy who did a thing, and we'll call him. And for $300,000, we can make snow in San Francisco for half an hour in the middle of July. It's just a lot of crushed ice, but sure looked like snow. Okay, can you call the guy for me? I made the call, and I know that 2 days later, my kid had snow in San Francisco on the 4th of July, 5th of July.
Yeah, but you see, you make a very good point there. I've got to interrupt you there, because if, for example, you don't have all the competencies, right, you must call on other people that do. And if you don't know anyone that does, you need to know someone like me or like you or like some of the people we know who can basically connect you with the right person, be that a mentor, a supplier, a whatever, a service provider, right? Or coach or consultant who can help, you know. And this is like massive, because otherwise you can maybe not fail, but you can make something a lot harder than it already is. It's like, if you find an expert who's amazing at something and someone comes to you and they say, well, I need you to do this. It's like, and you turn around and say, well, yeah, okay, I'll do it. But if you don't know how to do it, you go and find someone who does and say, hey, can you help me here? 9 times out of 10, they get to say yes, aren't they, at the end of the day?
Nat, it ties back to where we started a little while ago, is part of competencies. You need to understand what they are. And you need to be faithful to your competencies. When you go outside of that is when you crash the darn plane, you know, and you got to be careful with that stuff. And as I said, and you taught me some of this too, or you highlighted some of this for me. I think that, again, the greatest strength I have as an executive, if you will, a businessman, is I know what I know, and I'm very clear on what I don't know. That speaks to competencies. I am not competent to speak on debentures. I don't belong in the darn room. I don't know how to do that, but maybe Schooler does. Let's call Schooler. If you need, again, competencies are, you have to know them, and you have to be really faithful to them. Don't be mesmerized by all the noise, all the crap around you, all the environmental crap. I don't mean environment like smog or rain. The whole milieu that we all live in.
Yeah, distractions as well. But it goes back to, it's like, look, you know as well as I do that there are millions and millions and millions of hours of content on the internet, right? And actually, you can go and study pretty much anything for free, right? Okay, some courses you will need to pay for. Yes, you're going to get a certificate and whatever else. You can do that. But there are these MOOCs, which are, I don't know what it stands for, but MIT launched that 20 years ago, right? Where you can go learn about freaking anything, like, you know, anything you want for free. And I forget how many million people have gone through these. I think it might be 20 million people have actually learned stuff for free all around the world, which is amazing. So there are so many people who may listen to this in India, Africa, where, it doesn't matter where you are. You might be broke. You might be in the middle of your career, the beginning of your career, or even at the end, reinventing yourself, right? Or reinventing your business. But look, you can go learn about anything. That's what excites me about this world right now. It really is. And sure, it might be boring. You might not enjoy it. I mean, God, I sat through let me see, 20 hours of machine learning course with MIT. And believe me, it was excruciating. But I sat down and I was like, you know what? This is going to kill me, but I'm going to sit here and I'm going to learn about this because actually I need to know what I'm talking about when I'm conversing with other people who are in the technology industry. And if you want to get into a certain niche, say you're at the moment, you're a business guy and you're in marketing, you might decide, well, you know what? I want to learn about Web 3.0 and what the hell is going to happen in the metaverse and everything else. And so go and learn something new. I mean, look, it's not rocket science, is it? You just absorb content, find out where it is and go listen to it and watch it, you know?
At worst, that makes you a much more layered, textured, richer, intellectually richer individual and makes you a much better, certainly dinner guest. But, you know, you and I talk about this all the time, but doing research, studying, learning. And then you get into something and say, now, who cares? Who cares? I'm not so sure that's a good question. The brain is not much different than your biceps. The more you exercise it, the more supple it gets. And, you know, you spend an inordinate amount of time studying this, learning that, picking that up, sometimes only because, boy, that would be interesting. Let me do a little reading on that. You know what? 99% of people don't do that. I'm asked this all the time. Isn't this like exhausting? Because, you know, I did do a study for a year on finding the best bagel in America. Who cares? Nobody.
Oh, no, what are you talking about? I what are you talking about? I care. I love bagels.
Yeah, but nobody's gonna get on an airplane and find this little bitty deli in Westchester that I think has the best. But then I did the same thing with men's underwear.
Oh, bagels. I haven't had a bagel for 2 years. I'm going to have a bagel in January.
I will make arrangements to treat you to what I think is the best bagel in America. And I will go down in flames with that. I insist that I know. But again, I also spent a year finding out what the best men's underwear was in America. Why? I met these two women who got really annoyed their husbands because they never got the right underwear, and they designed an underwear that would be good for the big boys that were married to. And they made a company of it. I said, wow, I need to know more about that. I bought, I don't know, 300 pairs of underwear. By the time I was done, of which, of course, I donated 298, because what these two women in Michigan did was just that much better. People look at me, are you insane? No, but yeah. I know what I think is the best underwear in America. You know, I know what the best bagel is.
It's about the research. My dad did the same thing when he was in business. We made a rose petal wine, right? And it was sold in Mitsukoishi department stores in Japan, this wine. They absolutely love this. It was sold in the Tower of London, Hampton Court Palace in the UK, and all of these, you know, really, really Windsor Farm Shop and all sorts of places. And I think he fermented like 200 different varieties of rose petals in order to get right flavor for this particular wine. And it's fascinating, yeah? You could mix it. You could mix it with like a sparkling wine, and it actually made the sparkling cheap carver taste delicious. You know,
you see, funny. You see how this how this comes together. Hmm. I mean, you made my point. People think I'm insane. Who cares what the best club sandwich is in America? Who cares?
Well, I care. I'm love telling a club you, sandwich too.
Go to the American Airlines terminal in Dallas, Fort Worth, and the kids behind the counter in a coffee shop make the best club sandwich in the country. I don't know why.
Well, don't worry. We're going to explore this most certainly.
Please.
Thank you, Stephen.
This deserves at least an hour.
I'm going to push the outro. Thank you so much. And thanks to everyone for listening.
Thank you, Nat.
Thanks for watching and listening to Positive Personal Power Podcast. Get access to all our podcasts and other important updates on www.legacymediahub.com and subscribe wherever you listen and watch your podcasts on the Legacy Media Hub YouTube channel.